Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Maine of Your Own with me, Linda Moyo.
And me, Claire Quantzer.
So today, we are going to be discussing the business side of black hair.
Yeah, quite a serious one.
It is quite serious because it is big business, but we'll get to that. What's happening with your hair right now before we
Hair
continue?
Right now in a bit of a twist out. So twisted it yesterday and then slept on it. So big chunky twists and then undid them this morning and it's all out and big. And actually it's a bit humid today. It might not be when people listen to this, but I think it's going to shrink throughout this episode.
Because obviously we saw each other earlier today and it looks the same now. So been no change.
Great. Yeah. So the Cantu product it's seems working. To be working.
Yeah. I'm the same. Hair still out, big, bushy, but I'm quite liking it at the moment. And the product that I mentioned last time, the More Than Moisture cream, is still working out for me. Also, I'm going to London in a couple of weeks. So do you ever do this? So I've got a protective style that I'm going to be doing, but I don't want to do it too early for when I'm going to be doing something special.
Totally. I totally plan. You have to work backwards, don't you? Then. So if I'm going to be, the event is on, say, a Saturday, I want to undo it on this day, or what day do I need to wash it on to make sure that I've got enough time for my twist to dry?
Yeah. It's very important. And I actually put it in my iPhone calendar, do hair. So I remember it's that day, not a day before.
I remember a lady on Instagram, Jay Curls, she's called, and she was graduating. I remember her saying her debate about when to wash her hair because her twist out's always best. I think she said at day 3 it works out. So she was like, okay, then when do I wash my hair then to put it in the twist, have the perfect twist out for my graduation. So
Amazing. Everyone
feels that struggle.
Yeah, totally. So as we were saying, we're talking about black hair industry and businesses in terms of where we buy our human hair or synthetic hair from and all these products. So we'll get to that in a minute. But I think to start with, let's hit them with some facts, Claire.
Yes.
So first fact, black women spend 6 times more on hair products than white women in this country.
Yeah. And actually, just as a background, so there are 10 million women that identify as having afro or multi-textured hair in this country. So across Europe.
And it's pretty amazing, really, when you think about the amount that we're spending on hair and especially the comparison to white women. Mm-hmm. When, you know, you think about the population as a whole, 3%, this was from the 2011 census, 3% of the UK population are black. So that's black African or black Caribbean. And 2% are mixed, but it doesn't say what mix, obviously. So that could include lots and lots of different things.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's minuscule.
It is minuscule, but then the black hair industry, they say, is worth £88 billion. £88 million, sorry. Close to billions. But £88 million is a lot, considering the size of the population we're talking about.
It is, and I'm trying to think, like, you know, as a microcosm of that, my own situation. So when I go to the shop versus when my white friend goes to the shop, how much more am I buying than her? And yeah, actually it is a lot more because I'm doing shampoo, conditioner, and not only that, they have to be huge because I use massive amounts and I buy them more often than she would do. In fact, a lot of like my friends with straight hair will say, oh, you know, I only use a tiny bit of conditioner on the ends, only on the ends. Whereas I'm like, oh gosh. Like,
I need ladles
full. Half a bottle all over, leave it on as long as possible.
Yeah. And that's the thing, so that's not just your normal conditioner, you've got your leave-in conditioner as well.
Yeah, and then a leave-in conditioner. You know, if you're doing that lock method, then it's several things. You've got an oil, you've want a cream. Some people might want a gel, there's mousses, there's grease.
There's edge definer.
Edges, so we're sectioning our heads up into different sections. There's stuff for your ends, stuff for your roots,
stuff for your scalp. Our bathrooms are brimming full.
When you break it down, it is pretty mad, isn't it?
And that's just the products, because then there's also, if you think about the hair, if people are buying hair, they're buying weaves, they're buying stuff for braids, they're buying locks, they're having straight, wavy, curly, there's synthetic hair, there's human hair.
And I've been braiding my hair for a long, long time, And yet, even to this day, I still don't know how much hair I'm going to need.
No,
and
always, I always buy too much.
Because the idea of running out...
halfway through the panic. No one wants that.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, yeah, that's where we're at. And I don't think that that's ever going to change. But I guess that the interesting part of it all, for me, is that despite the amount that we spend on hair products and the frequency of it... there are very, very few black women or mixed race women running these businesses that sell these things. Why? That is our question of the day.
And that is a very good question. I mean, I don't think I have the answer, but I'm sure, you know, you'll agree that from when we were growing up and even now, the majority of the time, if you are going out to go and buy products that are for Afro hair, if you're not buying it from a big, you know, high street chain, most of the time, if you're going somewhere local, the shops tend to be owned by people of South Asian origin, which I find really fascinating.
Men as well.
Often men too. And it is quite interesting, you know. Clearly, they've seen a business opportunity. We know that it's a business that's an industry that's worth lots and lots of money, but it's interesting that there aren't many black people that are owning and running these businesses.
That's it. I think with any business idea, you've got to know that there's a gap in the market.
Definitely.
That needs filling, and they've clearly seen that a long, long time ago, which is, you know, when they've not got that hair growing out of their head.
Exactly.
But they still see that vision of what's going to happen, and it did it. It's exploded. Probably always been like that, but I think it's got even more huge.
Definitely.
Because of, well, lots of different reasons, I guess.
To think that actually, after so long, things haven't changed that much. Yes, there are like businesses and brands that are up and coming now, I think, because just speaking more widely, I think people are quite into supporting independent businesses and stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you would have expected there to be more black-owned shops and things by now. You know, we still have to go to wherever it is to go and buy these products, and they're often owned by the same people.
I think possibly it could also be down to it's a convenience thing and what you're used to.
Yeah.
Because even now I'm thinking, if I wanted to do my hair in box braids tomorrow, I would go to Hume High Street in Manchester.
Whilst I'm buying my plantain.
Yeah. Conveniently right next to Asda as well.
Exactly. You
know? But it's that is like the little strip of hair shops. So there's not just one hair shop, there's a few.
There's a few altogether.
And I think a lot of women that shop on that street will agree, if they don't have what you want in one, you'll go to another.
Totally.
And if they don't have it, you'll go to the other, and almost like, fine, which one sells it the cheapest and whatnot. So it's just like convenient to do that. But then if there was a shop on that street that was black owned by a black woman or a mixed race woman with hair like similar to mine, that would give me a lot of joy to go there.
Definitely. I think I'd definitely be compelled to go and, you know, check her out and try to support that business. Obviously, you know, if they sell the products that I want and provide a good service. But yeah, generally, I think I'd definitely want to go and try to support somebody. You know, if somebody who's investing in, I guess, their own community, for want of a better word, you know, you just want to be able to help somebody who's doing that.
And I wonder how easy it would be to just go and onto that, to that road and open your own shop, you know.
Well, yeah, that, I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's, you know, why hasn't anybody done it? There must be a reason why people haven't been doing it, because you see so many of these shops opening up, like you say, on Hume High Street. There's probably about five different shops, but why hasn't nobody else gone and opened one up there?
Would you even feel comfortable opening your shop among so many competitors that are all Asian men, basically? Would you fit within that? Would they like that? Would, you know, does that even matter? I don't know. I'm just kind of trying to get my head around it.
It's a bizarre one, isn't it? I don't know. Maybe that is why. Maybe people wouldn't feel comfortable being there, which is quite a difficult thing to say. But where else can they go? Where else can you go then? If you don't want to be on that particular high street, is there somewhere else you can go?
Yeah, that's it. Well, so I now shop online quite a bit because I've discovered certain websites that will sell braiding hair and things like that. I still go back to my Asian shop now and again, because if I want to braid my hair tomorrow, I know I'm gonna get it from there quickly and easily and actually be able to look at it physically. Yeah. So I do still shop there, but I'm increasingly feeling like this doesn't sit right with me as much anymore, because there are businesses out there that I feel that we should be supporting. Mm. And I just wish there was more. And
definitely.
Know, that's hopefully something that we can touch on with our guests. But it's hard, isn't it? Because at the same time, I don't want to put other people out of business, because they're just trying to make a living as well.
At the end of the day, you know, hats off to somebody. If you spot if you spot an opportunity in the market, then nobody's got the right to say you can't invest in it and start to make some money for yourself. So if we aren't doing it, we shouldn't be stopping other people from doing it.
Exactly.
The demand is definitely there.
There was one time I think it was when I had sort of newly transitioned and chopped the ends off and stuff, so I was getting used to my hair being out, and I went to the hair shop and I was totally overwhelmed with the products, because there's so many and there's like aisles and aisles of different things. And now, especially, I think back in the day it was like you just pick up a tub of grease and be done with it, but now there are so many more expensive brands that you don't know if are worth the money or not.
Exactly.
You don't know whether to kind of invest or
and you want to be the ingredients
because
and...
all that stuff. So, and I was feeling quite overwhelmed, and I actually asked, it was an Asian lady that was working there, and I asked her, I think I just in frustration I was just like, oh, you know, there's just so many things, I don't know what to pick. And she said to me, women from my culture, all we do is put coconut oil on our hair, straight up coconut oil, don't bother with all this other stuff. Just it's pointless. Basically saying to me, you know, you're being
mugged
in,
off.
Sucked into this industry that has seen the potential to, you know, hook us in.
Probably,
because we're desperate.
We're desperate.
And I was like, right. And she just picked up a bottle of coconut oil and gave me that. Now, I'm not saying that that was the answer, because I don't actually love coconut oil that much, to be honest. I don't think it works well on my hair. But, you know, she had a point, and I think that's something that we need to be mindful
of. You know
what?
That's true. That's true. Maybe that's why the market is growing, because we're being sucked into believing that we need all of these different products. We need all of, like we said before, we need the conditioner, the leave-in, the cream, the oil, the whatever. But to be honest, when I was 8 years old and my mum was plaiting my hair on a Sunday night, a tub of Dax did the job.
She wasn't doing the lock method, was she?
Exactly. It, you know, she'd wash it, and it was Dax or Blue Magic.
Blue Magic, yeah.
And that was it. And my hair was fine. I think my hair was strong. It grew. It looked absolutely fine.
And Blue
fine.
Magic, you know, it's a couple of quid. And, like, anyone that follows me on Instagram will know that I actually went back to that. I started using Blue Magic for protective styles, and I still do now, because I felt like, that it's a waste, really.
Yeah.
But I mean, other people might agree or disagree, I don't know. But I do think it's something that we should be thinking about when you look at the amount of money we're spending. Is it necessary?
So, I mean, I guess that's, you know, looking at the high street. But then you mentioned that you buy quite a lot of products online and stuff as well. I sometimes have a fear of, because, you know, I will buy things from Amazon. But then somebody mentioned to me that obviously there are quite a few businesses that will sell dupe products on Amazon. So if you think you're buying your Shea Moisture conditioner or something, I can't remember who it was that said to me now, or I might have seen it on somebody mentioning it on Instagram or something, that you might be more likely to buy, unless you're buying it from the actual brand or from a registered official registered supplier, that you could end up buying a dupe or something.
Yeah, you definitely do have to be careful. So have you ever used AliExpress?
I haven't, no.
I think it's more popular in America. Maybe any American listeners can vouch for that. But it feels like a lot of Instagrammers and bloggers from America talk about AliExpress. So you can get, it feels a bit like Amazon, I suppose, that kind of a feel. And you can get hair on there and hair products and things. However, I was looking through it, and I was looking through synthetic hair to buy. Because I thought, it's cheaper and maybe that's a better way of doing it. And it's sort of a bit like eBay, so it's like individual sellers on there.
Okay.
A bit like eBay shops, I guess. And so I'm looking through this one that was selling this, like, peroxide blonde Marley hair that I needed. And actually, it was my normal shop, Asian shop. They didn't have any of it, so I was specifically looking for that. I'm scrolling through, and what do I see in their picture gallery? Me. A picture of me.
No way!
Yeah, me with the blonde faux locks that I'd done, like,
oh, gosh,
a couple of years ago. And I was just like,
wow.
So that is really cool. And after I investigated it a bit more, so I thought, hang on a minute. Contacted them, the seller, and said, you need to take my picture down because you're selling a product. I didn't use your product to do my hair like that. And it's my picture. And obviously on the internet, in terms of rules about your pictures and things, it's all a bit vague. But they did take it down. And then I made the point of Googling my own name and looking in Google Images. And there were tons more
seriously
of hairstyles that I'd done. And then these AliExpress sellers using my pictures to sell their hair.
No way.
Which is flattering, but it's not true, is it?
Exactly.
And so someone else, like, you could go on there thinking, oh yeah, I want to do my hair like that, and that's what I'm buying, and it's not. So you do have to be really, really careful.
That's really surprised me.
I know.
And but it just shows, I guess, because it's so easy then for somebody to set up something online and then start selling things.
I've not checked it again in a while. I probably should
check again.
I'll probably be there. Buy this. You know?
So if anyone sees Linda's photo on AliExpress,
it's not real. It's not. Yeah, I'm not promoting them. another thing to mention. So a while back, I did a little collaboration with a company called Latched and Hooked. Mm-hmm. Now they're an American company. They're in Atlanta, and it's a black lady that set it up. The company herself, amazing hair that they sell, like really, really good synthetic hair that I had to braid with. But she's actually been talking on Instagram quite a bit about, she's been doing a lot of research into the chemical side of what they put in synthetic hair, which is something I've never really thought about. I just, like, you know, rip open the pack of Dream Girl or whatever it is, or what's that other brand called?
Expressions,
and just put it in. I don't even think twice. But apparently, you know, there's some bad things in there. So I know, and I'm sorry. But so she, that's part of her kind of offering, is that she makes the hair so it is safe and whatnot. I think she was saying that there's, like, never really been much work done in terms of looking into, well, what is this stuff we're putting in?
Do you know what? I've never thought about what it is.
Yeah.
I just know that it's not, when you decide not to go for the real hair anymore, the human hair, that's the option. You just think, oh, it's just synthetic. I've never really thought about what is actually in it.
But, you know, it's not with hair, a lot of hair, and probably a lot of our hair products as well. It's not like they've got that sort of EU stamp of approval or something. Or,
they're just in a bag.
You know, like the little lion on an egg.
There's nothing on it.
There needs to be a mark.
Some kind of, you're right, some kind of standard that needs to be adhered to. The main of your own standard. There we go. Get that logo on there.
Yeah.
So, main of your own approved.
Yeah. But yeah, that's, again, it's something to think about. We spend our money, but are we giving it enough thought in terms of how much we're spending and what we're buying?
And I guess to the point then, you know, this lady obviously is taking the time to understand what is going in there, what, you know, what these products are made of. Maybe that's because, I guess, she's got a personal vested interest in it. You know, somebody else who's in it just for the business might not necessarily take as much care or interest in it.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, and that's why we should be supporting these women that have started out with something that they're passionate about. We should be listening to them and sort of taking their advice on things. I've mentioned Afro Hair and Skin Company before on this podcast. But the lady who runs that, again, like, you can email her and she'll give you her opinion and her own experiences of products and tell you why she's made them the way that she's made them. And, you know, it makes it much more of an experience, doesn't it, than just a kind of cash, hand over your cash and just shove it on your head.
Definitely. And then there's the likes of Peckham Palms, which opened at the beginning of this year down in London. I haven't been yet, but it looks like a great little kind of hub for hair and beauty salons that are dedicated to Afro hair.
Yeah, and just a couple more as well to mention. These are where you would potentially buy hair from. So it used to be called Big Hair No Care. No Care, was it?
Or Big Hair, Big Hair No Care.
Big Hair No Care. Which was run by Freddie Harrell, who's you know, quite big on Instagram. But she's changed it to Rad Swan because I think it's going to be selling more things than just hair. So that's a good one to have a look at. There's Gina Knight Wig Design, who I think used to be called Gina Wigwitch. Mm-hmm. Some amazing wig creations that she's got, like, and in different textures, because that's one thing I found about our kind of standard hair shops. They still have a lot of straight hair in there.
Yeah.
And
you're still seeing the same things that you've probably been seeing for about 20 years.
We've kind of moved on a bit, haven't we?
Yeah.
And even in terms of like, and this kind of brings me on nicer to this next recommendation, braiding hair. Yeah, they sell like the browns and maybe some caramel colours and reds. But we've, again, we're embracing like multicolours now, and pink hair and blue hair and things. So shop Catface on Instagram, you can find them, sell an array of synthetic braiding hair, which, you know, some just some great ideas of different companies that you can try.
And for those that are a bit more, I guess, lazy, there's also something like Treasure Tress.
Yes.
Which is really good. So people can do a monthly subscription. And I think they look good because they kind of send you a nice selection of products each month, and often have like one brand
curly box as well.
I think I recognise that name.
Yeah, I feel like I do. I've never tried one, and I think that's something that I would like to try, because, you know, buying full sized and then it not being right for your hair, it's so frustrating.
Should we move on to our guest?
Yes. Our guest today is Sasha Atherton from The Happy Hair Co. Welcome, Sasha. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So we always start by basically talking about our own hair. So I think that's a good place for us to start with you. So tell us about your hair. What's your hair story?
Okay, so I'd say that it's only in, well, since I launched the business just over a year ago that I've fully embraced my hair. And a few people might be surprised about that because I've had it curly for longer than that. But growing up, I straightened it all the time. Mm-hmm. I did not want curly hair. It wasn't really a personal experience. I think it might be media driven, but I just know that I always wanted straight hair.
And then
the common story of when your daughter comes home from nursery and she doesn't want, I want a straight yellow hair, like whoever it was. It wasn't Elsa Milano at that time, but it was something similar, and her nursery friends and stuff. And I was like, well, okay, now I need to do something and start embracing my own hair. So then I started wearing my hair curly, which was severely damaged at that point because it was loads of heat damage and the dyeing and stuff, but I did. And then I got loads of books about curly hair and I love my hair, etc. And so that was when she was about, she's eight now, so that was probably when she was about three, so it started then, but still not in terms of healthy hair. It was just okay, I'll have my curls,
it was just
fine,
yeah,
I'll just straighten it less. And then when the knowledge came of when I launched the business is when we started to take it really seriously, and the ingredients and stuff like that. So it's the healthiest it's been now. Haven't straightened it since. Now it's about 4 months. Prior to that, it was eight. And then I did a little experiment for our followers and for myself. Never again, but it was good to see how long it was.
And this is your natural colour now?
Yes, it's like all the dyes pretty much. I've grown it out, but
not dyeing makes such a big difference, doesn't it? Well, the bleach.
Well, I used to have it blonde every summer.
Because you used to do, I know you said that you used to do singing and stuff, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Videos
like, did you feel more pressure then, like as if you were as an entertainer? Did you feel then that you had to have a certain look?
You know what? Not consciously, but of course we all did.
Yeah,
but it wasn't. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It wasn't a thing that was spoken about that we had to have straight hair. Just me and pretty much everybody I knew growing up, particularly at secondary school, felt like we should straighten our hair. It just seemed like the thing to do. Mm. In primary school, not as much, because, you know, we used to have all our funky styles with all our bright bubbles and stuff, and that was just the way it was because we weren't doing our own hair. But when it started to come into where we were doing our own hair, then it was like, oh, you know, and we actually had straighteners that worked at that point, because when I was younger and trying to do it, it was like the steam ones.
Yeah.
Which just made my hair curly. Exactly. I was like, so,
thanks,
so no.
Fabulous.
Yeah, exactly. They're still doing them, apparently. But yeah, so in answer to your question, no, it wasn't pressure. It was probably more internal. You know, it was probably more just the subconscious, what we saw in the media and the beauty standards, actually, that made me and a lot of my peers and friends feel like we should have straight hair. I really disliked my curly hair.
Really?
I really disliked it. You know, it's ironic because I wouldn't go out on a night out and stuff if I hadn't straightened my hair. I would fully cancel.
Really?
Nights out, I was like, I have not straightened my hair, you lot are crazy, I'm not going anywhere.
Wow.
Which is now, it's just like, I would never do that. But it, for sure, it was something that I always, the relaxer, I only texturised it once. Mm.
The creamy crack.
Yeah. Luckily, I didn't have to kind of go down that route, because once the proper straighteners came in, the ceramic ones, my hair straightened easily.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was something that I always wanted from a young age, to have straight hair.
Oh. And that then spurred on the idea to turn it into a business?
Well, yes. Yes and no. In terms of the business, it started off as the Happy Hair Box Company. And okay. It was the concept was behind a storage box, because I don't know about you guys, but I have loads of products and accessories mm-hmm. and stuff. And I had an absolutely battered bag at the time, like a Shopkins bag or something, that everything was thrown in. And I was just doing Jaya's hair one day, and I was like, I really need something to put this stuff in. Like, it's just ridiculous. This bag is literally hanging apart. So then I thought we should do a storage box or something. And this is very common for me. Like, I'll have an idea of something that exists or that I feel could be a bit better, and I'll just go through the process. So I got a prototype made within like 2 weeks, because I can't sleep, because I literally need to get this idea to fruition. So then I was like, actually, it's a good opportunity to put some positive representation on the boxes. So let's do some black girls with afros and an engineer outfit, and that's STEM stuff, because at the time I had another business which was diversity recruitment and stuff. So I did a lot of STEM work and tech. So we did Elenia the engineer, which is a little afro puff girl with in an engineer outfit, and scientists and that kind of stuff. So that's how the business started, as a storage box. And I thought having those characters on the boxes would be the selling point, and people weren't as bothered as I thought they would be. So even though it went okay, we made a few sales to start with, it actually just ended up being the springboard for what the business is today.
Yeah.
And I actually don't do those boxes at the moment now. So
so how did you then transition from the boxes to then the next stage? Because obviously we know you for like the satin bonnets
and
the scarves and wraps and things. Yeah. So how did you then move on to those products?
It was so organic. Like, it wasn't a proactive thing. And actually, the bonnets wouldn't exist if I hadn't been asked for them. I had no intention of doing any bonnets. Okay. I had never worn a bonnet myself, because I saw the ones in the market and they felt horrible. So I was never putting that on my head. And I'm not never looking like that at that point. So in terms of it evolving from the box, it was organic, but more to do with... So twofold, I suppose. One was, when something's not generating enough profit for me or income, I immediately think of, right, what's next? So then, as I was starting to, because obviously I launched this business, and then I've started the Instagram, and then I'm starting to come across all of these natural hair bloggers, and they're starting to talk about ingredients and harmful ingredients. Don't use a towel. I was like, what do you mean, don't use a towel? And remember, this is only last April.
Yeah.
So I'm like, so they're using t-shirts. I want to wear my t-shirts. Okay, so I was like, well... I don't have many clothes. I want to wear my t-shirt. So I was like, I'm just gonna make a towel, and this is just normal. As I say, it's normal for me. So I was like, okay, I'm just gonna make my own towel. So then I started doing some research into fabrics and stuff. I was hunting and hunting for what I felt would be good, a good combination. And then I, it was organic cotton and bamboo, seemed like a really good combination. Okay. So then the frizz towel was born. So that is how it evolved fully, because that then became the propeller for the business just skyrocketing, because it really accelerated from that towel. And yeah, that's kind of how it happened, really organically, really naturally, just from the knowledge. And then, oh, we're not supposed to use a towel. Oh, well, that makes sense, because it's really rough.
Yeah. So, when you think about it, it makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
You never really stop to actually think about it. It's like, oh, it's a towel, it dries stuff, so I'll use it to dry my hair.
Well, at the point where... so I dyed my hair back darker, brown again, to get to start the healthy journey, because the blonde was just awful. So I dyed it dark to then grow it out, because it was similar colour to my hair, to my natural hair colour. And I just thought my hair was frizzy because I'd ruined it. I just thought it was frizzy.
Yeah.
But then when the first time I used that towel, the frizz went, I was like, what the? What is going on? Like, and then that's when you say, you know, start to think, well, of course, if I'm using a towel, like a traditional terry towel.
Yeah.
Of course it's going to have that effect on my hair. Mm-hmm. Especially if I'm rubbing it. Like, all that friction and the roughness of the fabric, it's not gentle on our hair at all, actually. So, yeah, it made a lot of sense.
Obviously, back then, you say, like, the towel took off, that kind of propelled the business.
Yeah.
And I think, well, anyway, in recent years especially, there's been a lot more independent, you know, and black women basically starting these types of businesses.
Yeah.
So how are you finding it now? Like, is business still booming, or are you finding that because there's so many other businesses selling similar types of things now, that it's a tougher marketplace?
It's not tougher for me, in the sense that there's not many selling my stuff. Mm, yeah. Protective accessories, hair care products, yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of shampoos, conditioners, yeah. Everything, yeah.
Yeah, it's a strange one because even though the market's becoming really oversaturated, it's not quality. It's, mm. They're not all quality products and yeah. They're not all kind ingredients. So you've got different pockets of the community. Mm. People like me, like I won't go anywhere near silicones and all that kind mm. of thing. My daughter's really sensitive to products with coconut oil. Yeah. And so I've got to be really specific about which products I use. And I'm also very specific about which products we stock.
Okay.
So from my perspective, even though the market's got tons, even in the UK now, there's not loads that I will use.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. So, but from my perspective, there aren't many. There aren't many, and particularly because our stuff's like more luxury. So it's like luxury protective hair care. It's, as you say, the bonnets, the satin bonnets. Mm. It's not the bonnets that you find when you go to the local hair shop or the market. Like yeah. The fabric's totally different.
Yeah. How do you find that process in terms of finding the right suppliers?
Well, firstly, being an innovator is tough because I literally have ideas 24/7. It's like my brain does not stop. So I've always got something going on. And in terms of fabric, at retail suppliers fabric mm. is totally new to me. I had not done anything to do with retail or e-commerce or anything like that yeah. prior to starting this business, so I am winging it all the time. In terms of finding suppliers, it can be tough. Like with the frizz towel, even right now there is only one UK supplier okay. for my fabric that we use, which is a challenge. But of course, in my mind, I've already done the research. Is okay, if I need to go outside of the UK, what kind of places have it? Mm. So you kind of have to do research that you don't know how to do. Google obviously is your best friend.
Yeah, it's great that you've been able to keep it yeah. UK though.
Yeah, I'm so trying far. So yeah. hard, you know, even just with some of the new products that I'm looking to do, you know, I exhaust as much as I can in terms of at least getting it made here.
Yeah.
So my the people that make our stuff, because I can't even sew a button on, so it's definitely not me. but the people that make our products are, you know, local women at the moment, mums. You know, I was able to send one of the mums to, her and her family went to Lapland based on the business that I've been able to wow. send her way. You know, that's the kind of thing that that's, I want. Yeah. I want to make sure that the people that are working with us, whether it be the suppliers or whatever, are people that need and enjoy the work.
Yeah.
As long as I can sustain that, I want to.
I think what makes you quite unique as well is the fact that you are British and yes. it's a UK-based company. Because when I'm looking for any of these kinds of things,
yeah.
I often come across American websites.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you get a lot of people ordering from the yeah. States? Because I know you ship worldwide, yes. don't you?
Yeah, which is...
What's like the ratio?
So it's definitely predominantly UK.
Yeah.
But I have... US, but not just US, like Europe, Mexico at one point, wow. random places. But this is because there's the curly community spreads wide, the natural hair community spreads mm. wide. And also we partnered with EcoSlay, which yes, is a really yeah. booming brand in the US that, again, is becoming widespread. So now that I ship anywhere, we're starting to get more countries through. So the US is definitely ahead of us in terms of bonnets and that kind of protective yeah. accessory. Mm. But still, not necessarily a luxury version of it. So our bonnets are lovely. They look really pretty. They're, you know, rose gold, different colour mm. combos, they're reversible. So there's not really many of them anywhere. So I think when somebody in the US comes across a black-owned business, oh, actually, they're in the UK, oh, actually, mm. it's handmade, oh, that's really nice. They, you know, a few of them aren't reluctant to buy, and we have, like, a flat rate shipping, so it's not going to cost them the yeah. to get the stuff over there. So I think it just works really well. And the frizz towel, because there isn't a frizz towel over there. They've got microfibers, okay. but they don't have mm. a towel like ours. So they're coming along. I definitely want to expand further.
Okay. So you mentioned that, obviously, I think a lot of people get excited when they find your product that's, you know, it's a black-owned business. Yeah. People love that.
Yes.
But, I mean, we spoke earlier around the fact that, generally speaking, for most of our experiences, you know, growing up and even now, when people are looking for products for black and afro hair, if you go into the high street or, you know, to your local high street, a lot of the shops tend to be owned by Asian men, generally. Yep. Why do you think that is?
Because we're not proactive enough as a black community.
Yeah.
In short, I suppose it's a very simplistic response, but I think, you know, it's interesting, you know, because my views of this and many things as I've grown older have changed. And especially having this business now. If you follow us on Instagram, you'll see I'm very pro-black. I speak on it. I'm very honest, maybe too much sometimes, but I am very authentic in terms of my views and the importance of supporting black-owned businesses and stuff like that. So I think that from my perspective, the mentality needs to be focused on more the fact that it's us that's not done it. How can we blame this Asian community from seeing an opportunity and a need and, you know, maximising on that? Of course they're going to. If they've got the funds and the mechanisms to be able to go and utilise that opportunity, why would they not? But why aren't we? I think that's our thing, is that there's so few black-owned businesses. Like, I have proactively gone out there because I want to stock our stuff in black-owned businesses as a priority. I want to give them a bit of an edge, because I feel like at the moment you go into, as I've said, you go into your shops and your markets, you get a certain quality of bonnets and do-rags and head wraps and stuff, and I want the priority for me to be partnering with the black-owned businesses so that they've got luxury products, you know, that are still affordable to the demographic, but again, it's about black-owned businesses supporting other black-owned businesses, and we're just not proactive enough. Like, why haven't we gone and opened more historically? Yes, I get that it's the funds, but there's always ways to raise funds if it's important enough, and I don't think it's been a big enough priority.
Do you think that there's enough of maybe a community in terms of people supporting each other and supporting each other's businesses? Because obviously, you know, we see more and more independent black owned businesses now. Do you feel like there is a community now? Do you think that people are working more together? You've said that you want to be able to get your products into black owned businesses, and you're working with EcoSlay and stuff, but do you think that there's enough of that happening at the moment?
I don't think we'll ever get to a point where it's going to be enough. No, not enough, but there are more people like myself that are proactively trying to improve that. I think it's, you can't really be passive with something like this. There needs to be more of us that are proactively trying to do it. Because if I was to have this business and just say, okay, if a black-owned business approaches me, yeah, sure, you know, they can stock my stuff. There's not many there. So how many, what's the ratio going to be, you know, from black-owned businesses compared to the Asian-owned that's going to stock my stuff if I didn't proactively push them towards a black-owned, you know? So it's that kind of thing. But I think we need to take ownership. I mean, I'm a single mum, can't afford to do most of the stuff that I do most of the time, but I make it work because it just makes business sense, and that's the main priority, and that's what drives me. And more people need to be like that. And we do need to be more supportive, but we need to take more ownership. I feel like a lot of the time when you have this conversation, it's more towards, it's been done to us. You know, we don't have enough shops. Yeah, I know that we don't have enough shops, but the only people that could change that is us. It's not easy, but I'm starting to see more. Like, there's some young women that have just opened one in London. Might be Wisden Green, but okay, I might have made that up. And I can't remember the Heritage, I think they're called. And that's younger people. I think traditionally we're used to going into hair shops and seeing older people running right?
Yeah.
But I think that will be the change. I think it will be, you know, the younger generation realizing what we don't have. And they're going to be the ones, I think, that will go and open them. Like, this is just two black girls that have decided I want a black-owned hair shop, so I'm going to open one, you know, and that's what we need, really.
Also, just thinking about the customer side of things, because I know on your Instagram you've spoken a few times about customers supporting black-owned businesses, black women, and how you can go about doing that. But I feel like there's still a lot of, I mean, I'm probably even guilty of it myself. Yep. Like, oh, I'll just nip to Hume High Street and pick up that product because it's convenient.
Exactly.
And I'm not really thinking, actually, there's Sasha
selling
better products.
Yes.
She's like me.
Yeah.
Why? What is stopping me from doing that? Is it just laziness?
But I think you're right in terms of convenience. And of course, we're all guilty of that. It's not just, you know, as I said, it's that proactive mentality. It's the convenience aspect affects our everyday lives. It's supermarkets, it's the expresses. It's like, I'll go and pay £2 more in the express if I can't be bothered to go to the big Tesco. It's literally that, you know.
Yeah.
I will go, and don't get me wrong, I go to Boots sometimes. if I can't get the product that I need quickly because I've run out of all of my normal hair stuff, I will go to Boots and I'll go and buy it because it's down the road, or I can just drive to the traffic centre or whatever.
Yeah.
So convenience does play a big part. But again, if you're not consciously thinking to yourself, I want to support a black-owned business, you're not going to do it, you know, unless it's right there in front of you. I am very proactive in it, and more so now because I own one and I know the difference it makes when people support us and support us, not just because of that, but that plays a role in it. I had a white lady from the US purchase from me because she likes to support black-owned businesses, right? And there's no reason for her to do that other than that's what she's decided she wants to do because we don't get enough support.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's it is definitely a proactive decision, a mindset switch that you need to say, okay, so this month already I've supported two. I eat chocolate 24/7 and I go and get it from Tesco. So I've just gone and ordered from Yard Confectionery or something like that. I came across them online. Jamaican British owned business, so I went and ordered some chocolate from them instead of Tesco. Oh, wow. You know,
is that good chocolate?
I haven't had it yet. I haven't received it yet, but it's just those things, you know. And yeah, as I said, you kind of have to be proactive.
And it's not just buying products, is it?
No, the support. Yeah, I think you know, it's an interesting one because even within the natural and curly hair community, and I refer to that a lot because that is kind of where everything happens. Mm. That's where you start to see most of the changes that I'm talking about, because the mindset shifts happen there first, if that makes sense. Mm. You've got everybody talking about topics constantly, which makes us all more aware of it in a community that's focused on the hair. Does that make sense? So,
yeah.
But you have... It can still be a double-edged sword. It can be a very... negative space at times, very judgmental, you know. We're not always focusing, or the community is not always focusing on the positives. On the flip side, you can have hundreds, thousands of people and women talking about supporting black-owned businesses, talking about embracing your natural hair, you know. So it's just kind of about getting yourselves in those spaces of people, but encouraging each other and kind of holding each other accountable to make sure that we're proactively doing it. The support, particularly, because it's very competitive, especially with this whole influencer thing coming through now.
Yeah,
it's so competitive. Like, everybody just wants to get free stuff. I've been ranting about this on the Instagram this week. But again, our shifts are changing, and every time we're trying to focus on something else, the priority of the black owned, you know, it's nobody's, well, less people are focusing on, you know what, let's support black owned business right now, when they're moaning about the fact that they've not had as much free stuff as they did last week. And you know, this influencer decided that she's gone slightly under 10k, so she hasn't got a few bits of functionality on the Instagram now. It's just like, you know, and that, it's in the world of social media, it's very easy to get distracted. So you've got all of those elements, you know, taken away from the fact that actually we could really be making some serious changes right now. And I think very big in terms of, I fully see our stuff in John Lewis. Like, yes, I will support black-owned businesses constantly, but as a black-owned business, I should be stocked in the high street store.
Yeah.
Okay? You know, and it's like, right now, there is nothing like our products in John Lewis or Boots or Superdrug. There's nothing like them. There's hair products, but there's not the accessories. So, I don't know.
But on the kind of, I guess, the investment thing, do you think that it's... I feel like I've seen a stat somewhere and I'm trying to look for it and I can't find it, just saying that, like, black women are the least likely to secure investment when it comes to kind of small businesses and entrepreneurs. Do you agree with that? I mean, I don't know if you've ever looked for kind of investment and things, but do you find it's more difficult to get that kind of support?
100%. Even just the accessibility of it. Where the hell do you start? It's, you know, I've started to explore investment now because we've scaled once. So we rebranded in February.
Yeah.
And that was super, super successful. So since February, when we did the rebrand, we've brought in just over nearly 12k now. Since February. So the return on investment from what it cost me for the rebrand, it paid for itself within about 2 days.
Wow, that's good. Yeah, that's
really good. So so in that respect, that scaling part was brilliant, but now we need to scale again because it's a tricky one for me because the business keeps accelerating and keeps growing and growing, but me personally, I need a constant wage, you know. So it's those things that now we need to scale properly. It needs to go further than just me and the small team I have. Yeah. I need people. I need proper mechanisms to really start getting this to where I need it to be. And in terms of investment, even just the, okay, right, where do you get it from? What does it look like? Mm. All of that is so grey. Is it, you know, it's not clear at all.
Yeah.
There's one company called, can't remember the name, but they're like a black-owned, like kind of like an acceleration company where okay. they support entrepreneurs and they take some equity and they give like resources and stuff. Backstage Capital, I think they're called.
Okay.
They're based in London, but they only open their applications now and again. And I came across them, and that's the kind of company that you would love. Like, you know, they have the resources, mm. they have the investors, they have the network and things like that, and they don't take too much of your money. Hardly any of those, and definitely not purpose-built ones for, you know, black-owned businesses. So not only is it hard to get the investment, we're just so ill-prepared. Like, if I was to go and do, I think they call it seed stages, like, yeah, you know, you go yeah. through different, I'd be so ill-prepared. It's hard. I think in the UK, the whole investment piece just needs to be clearer
yeah.
and easier.
More transparent.
Yeah, for sure. I will have to do it at some point. But yeah, it's tough. It's not easy.
So, in an ideal world then, you know, 5-10 years down the line, where would you like to see the Happy Hair Company?
More so global. So I think even though, you know, we're touching on the different countries now in terms of customers, that like, I want us to be stocked there like a, you know, a global brand. So I see us as being like a hub, you know, like for protective and safe
yeah.
products and accessories. I think, you know, that's one thing is that people keep asking me to bring our own hairline out because they're like, yeah, we know that you'll give us safe stuff and we always listen to what you say about it, so can you make your own? I'm like, that's a whole different realm for me, like formulation and all the scientific yeah. stuff. I have no clue right now. So but from my perspective, I do see like a household name, I suppose, I guess is what I'm saying, but globally, but for all the right reasons, while still pushing forward. I very much want to create a lot of opportunity through this business. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people like me out there that maybe don't have the same drive or survival, I mm-hmm. guess, because that's what drives me most of the time, that just need a little bit of help or something, you know, that could go and set a business up and, you know, and that's what I kind of want to do through this. And that's why I kind of mentioned earlier that the people that work with me and for me at the moment are people that have their own little businesses in essence, but global. And then like the chain stores, as I said, mm-hmm. just to make a black owned business a prominent brand, like we see in that in the shops. I think it's just like, why shouldn't I feel like we have this tunnel vision or, you know, small mentality that we don't belong there. And that's because we don't see it.
Mm, yeah.
Even Shea Moisture is not black owned anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like Unilever who owns Dove and stuff. So, well, that's gone now. We don't have a, you know, black owned brand that's in the high street. And Boots are doing fantastic. Boots and Superdrug.
They're doing well, yeah.
They've cottoned on. they've really, and good, you know, good on them, because they've really cottoned on and it's so much more accessible to us now. But we still need to be making sure that we're benefiting from that.
Yeah. I think probably the main thing that stops black women setting up their own businesses, even if they've got amazing ideas, it's going to be the financial side, isn't it? And you've been so open about your personal struggles on Instagram. And
which is quite good, because actually it's very easy to think, oh, you know, somebody's selling lots of products, so it must be making loads of money, or aren't they doing well? It's easy.
Yes.
And from an outsider looking in, look at your website, it's really professional, amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like, it's making money, she's fine, whatever. But the reality of it is different. It's a different story. Mm. Yeah. How do you keep going? And do you ever have a point where you're like, you know, I can't pay my bills, so
all the time.
I'm going to have to scrap the whole thing, or will nothing make you stop doing this?
I think I'm very much doing stuff. Even though I say I'm winging it, I'm doing stuff that I haven't seen or had before. I haven't had an entrepreneur that looks like me that I can relate to. If someone said to me, who's your role model? I couldn't really tell you, because I can't think of anybody, particularly UK-based. You couldn't, people say Oprah and stuff. Like, but she's not from the UK. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm very transparent and open, because I feel like we need that so much. And of course, I'm a huge fan of like the Richard Bransons of the world and stuff, but I speak about this often. We always see them at the end point.
Mm.
So when we read about their struggle in the books, it doesn't seem real, because we weren't there for it. We didn't see it. So we just see the money and the success at the end. Whereas I say this all the time, I'm showing you now throughout that whole bit, so that when we get to that end point, you guys have all seen it. It's not just in the book. You've actually seen me live it. And I think the financial aspect is crippling. That is, as you say, the main thing that either stops someone from even trying.
Yeah.
Where they can't get past the 1 year mark, because that's like the milestone that everybody says, if you can get past a year, that's the first achievement.
Yeah.
And you just have to, you just have to be one of those people. You're either made for it or you're not. Mm-hmm. You know, becoming an entrepreneur made a lot of sense to me when I became one, because I was like, this is why I felt different. You know, is that growing up, I felt very different. Mm. I've gone through a lot of stuff, but I've always been very resilient, and I've always felt like I wanted more. To a fault sometimes, because when I used to be at work, so I worked until I was 16, and I really didn't like people like demeaning me or telling me what to do. It's just always been a thing. I don't necessarily have a problem with authority generally, but when it came to that, I was just like, I don't like this. I don't like this feeling. Definitely. And it makes sense now, because now I run my own business, and I just feel like it was obviously what I was meant to do. But with this, it's hard to explain, because the business itself is smashing it. It's taking care of itself, like all the costs and everything. The revenues, I haven't got to worry about it. It's my salary. And I wouldn't need a salary other than the living expenses. So that's what I need. For me to be able to keep running it and scaling it, I need a salary because I need to pay for stuff. You know, so it's not, they don't go hand in hand. Like, just because the business is doing really well, that doesn't mean I am. And now it's about getting it to a point. And these bits that I'm speaking to you about now are stuff that you probably won't know, or you might not have heard somebody speak about it. And these are the small gems of running your own business or starting it that are just really useful. You know, just thinking about this stuff. Like, I now know, because I've had to sit down and figure out how much money I need, we need to be bringing in consistently around $3,000 a month. For me to be okay to have a bit of a salary, and for the business to at its current pace to take care of itself, and for me to have a bit to cover what I need to. Retail is not consistent like that unless you've reached a certain point. You know, as I said, we've made like 12 grand in a couple of months, in a few months, but then this month might be quiet. You know, it's like, it's retail, it's seasons, it's all different behaviours that affect this stuff. So that's the financial aspect of it is tough. Like, you might have seen that I've gone on Instagram, I'm like, guys, I'm selling my car. And everyone's like, what the hell? I will sell my car if I need to get a cash injection and sell my car for a bit. That is what I will do, because I know that I've got, so I've just partnered with Denman. We've got our own Denman brushes. We've got our own Denman brushes coming out that might make me, I don't know, a couple of grand. So if I sell my car, I'll probably have that, some of that back in a bit. And that's the way I have to think, because where else am I going to get the money from unless it's investment? And investment's not a quick thing either. So I will sell my stuff. And that is, it sounds crazy to some people, and it's very extreme, because it is selling your stuff. But that is the reality. I sold my house, not just for the business, but for debt and stuff. But I used that, some of that house sale money for the rebrand. I wouldn't have been able to rebrand and create the revenue that I did without selling my house. That was just the reality.
Fair play to you, though, because it takes that kind of guts from one person to get this whole thing going. Otherwise, we'll just end up in this same
cycle. But the financial aspect of it. I think if you can, when you're starting out, if you can work for a bit at the start, do it. Loads of people do it. I'd already had a first business by the time I launched Happy Hair Company and was self-employed, so that wasn't an option for me. But like now, I might have to go and do some part-time work temporarily. I'm really hoping I don't, because I can't even imagine like the whole mindset shift that I'd have to do to work for someone and then cram it into school run times and then go back home at night time and then try and run this business. It will be insane. But I will do it if I have to. Yeah.
Obviously, you were involved, you and your daughter were involved in the Curls Like Us launch with Rochelle Humes.
Yeah.
What was that? How did that come about? Because that's amazing. I think that might be how I found out about you.
A lot of people did.
How did that come about?
So we were only 2 months in. We'd only launched 2 months prior.
Yeah.
And Rochelle followed us first. So at that point, she was very active in the curly hair community and speaking about her journey. And in parallel, I had a load of, because I'm quite active on LinkedIn. So I had quite a lot of people on LinkedIn saying, you should get in touch with Rochelle Humes. And I was just like, whatever. You guys are talking about, I'm just going to go and talk to this celebrity. Like, no, I'm not. But And then around that same time, she followed us. And then she messaged me. And she just said, just casually, hi, hon, I've got this thing that I'm doing in London next week. You know, if you're free and I'd love your daughter to come, like, come and film for it. And I was just like, oh.
Okay.
Yeah, so I just spoke to Jay. Obviously, she would have had to take a day off school, but my daughter, she's a bit unique. She goes to see Google and stuff, so she has days off school to go to the Google HQ and stuff. So I was like, you know, spoke to her, do you want to come and do this thing? She's like, yeah, sure. So we went over to London and we filmed Curls Like Us. It was supposed to be like a bit of a knowledge hub, you know, and blogs and vlogs and stuff, to just to kind of a central point where different hair types and stuff could go and get information. I don't know that it's really done much since that point. But anyway, yeah, that's kind of how it came about. So we went there, we met her. She was really nice. Her and Jaya was sat there on the iPad and stuff, and it was really nice and laid back. And then we did a vlog, which it just, there was quite a few people there, but we just basically answered some questions about our own hair journey and stuff like that. And then, yeah, a few people found us through that. And then, as I say, around that time is when we launched the frizz towel as well. So that's when I say it kind of really took off really quickly. And then it was for me to try and keep up with that. But yeah, that's how that happened. Random. Nice, but random. Yeah. Social media, the power of social media.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're just over a year in.
Mm-hmm.
For anybody who's like thinking of starting their own business now, if somebody else was to say, you know what, I really want to get into the Afro hair industry, I want to launch my own business, what would if you had three bits of advice for them, what would you say to them?
First one would be do it.
Go for it.
Honestly, like, I'm the wrong person to ask, because I'll tell you to just sell everything. Just do it, whatever you can, do it. I'm the wrong person to ask. Yeah, I'd say do it, like, 100%, regardless of whether it fails, regardless of whether it takes you down a different path. Like, it's just so much better than not. I just feel that, and I will never, like, diss having a 9-to-5 or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you've got that fire in you, you've got to explore it.
Yeah.
You've just got to. You will never feel settled. You'll never be okay if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
So do it. The second thing would be get as prepared as you can for the reality of it. Like, you're not going to be able to prepare yourself, because it's a very unique, challenging thing to do. But do what you can to mentally and financially as much as you can prepare for it. It just makes the journey easier. The last thing, I'm probably missing out some better things, but surround yourself with people that are either on it or much further than you are at the moment. Okay. And that's a tough one, actually, because I...
Finding those people.
Right, yes, it is. And it's hard for me, by the way, but I'm starting to... So the whole, like, power of thought and thoughts become things and that kind of thing, I'm very much about that now. But I remember, I think it was The Secret. No, it wasn't The Secret. It was one of those Grow Rich something. Yeah. And I was listening to the audiobook, and they said, you need to have your network of people, at least 5 or 6 people. And I'm thinking, I haven't got those people. Okay, so you're saying that is a key ingredient. Yeah. You cannot be successful without having these core people. Like, I don't have them. Strangely, the months to follow that, a few of those people started to come into my life, you know, through different means.
Yeah.
And actually, a couple of those people are potential investors now. You know, so So going back to what I've said, even though you might not immediately have those people around you, you've really got to, like, seek them out. I hate networking events and stuff. That's where you find them. I still don't go to them, I'll be honest. But that's kind of where you find them. Saying that, though, the people that are really successful probably don't go to a lot of those events. So it's tricky, but you've got to, one way or another, surround yourself with people. Yes, some that are maybe at the same stage as you, but you want to be around and start seeing these people that are doing it, or that have overcome some of the stuff that you're facing or might face, the successful people.
Yeah.
But still, without losing yourself, I think it can be quite demoralizing. I follow quite a few successful people, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm nowhere near that, or I'm broke right now. Like, it can be, actually, you need to you need a lot of mental and emotional stamina, which I work on a lot because I'm not, I don't have a lot of it, but I think, yeah, so it's the people that you surround yourself with. I've got a couple of, well, quite a few entrepreneurial friends, which really helps. Just having somebody that understands the mindset of and the requirements of running your own business and the mad things that we've spoken about that I do that don't seem crazy to those people, you know? So, yeah, it's really key. And actually, if you have a bunch of people around you, either that don't get it or that don't think you can do it, yeah, you probably won't.
This won't happen.
Yeah.
Good advice.
Thanks.
Yeah, oh, well, thank you, Sasha.
Oh, that's been great.
Really, really interesting to kind of find out more about you and hear your experience and stuff. Ooh,
so many things that I've never even thought of before.
It is, and as I say, you know, sometimes you just need to tune into the right conversation or ask the right questions to even stumble across those bits of those little nuggets of information. But yeah, thank you. I'm glad that you've enjoyed it.
Yeah, and if anybody wants to hear more about running a business, Sasha is the perfect person to follow on Instagram because, as we've already said,
keep it 100% real.
She keeps it real. The Insta stories are always flowing with information and honesty.
Yes.
So what's your Instagram for everybody who wants to
follow? The Happy Hair Co.
And the website is thehappyhairco.com.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So yeah, if people want to check out some of the great products, then go take a look. Or if you fancy investing as well,
Feel free.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.